If you're a California conservative, a libertarian, a moderate Democrat, believe in common sense, or just a sane person, this is the political podcast for you. It's the California Underground Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the California Podcast. My name is Phil, your host. And as always, with me is my co-host, the best and fastest researcher in the West, Camille. How are you tonight?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Keeping busy, trying to stay warm in these cold Southern California winters all of a sudden. We have a lot to get to tonight, as we were saying before we hopped on. I've got about 200 tabs open, which means you probably have about 500 tabs open. We've really gone deep on Prop 1 for everybody. So we're going to be getting into that. We're going to be hearing from Gavin Newsom himself, kind of fact-checking that, going into who's been supporting this, who we think is probably likely going to benefit from it, ups and downs, all of that stuff, because this is the only proposition that's coming up on the ballot on March 5th. So it's really got all the attention, and it supposedly has this bipartisan support, which makes people think that everybody supports it, bipartisan support. Couple bits of news before we get started, though. Next Saturday, the 24th, Camille and I will be at the Libertarian Convention up in Orange County. We'll be there Saturday. So if you see us, say hi. We'll probably be running around recording, doing some maybe mobile interviews of candidates, stuff like that. We couldn't get a table to do a live podcast, but we're going to be there. We're going to be broadcasting, doing some other things. And then the other news for me personally is March 5th. I will be one of the panelists on NBC7 down here in San Diego to comment on what's going on with the election. So I'll also have former co-host Cynthia will be there as well. So if you're in San Diego and you want to tune into NBC7 and watch me opine about the election results, I'll be on the whole night, I guess, but more information to come. Anyway,
like 7 p.m. Yeah.
I think it's 8 p.m. it starts, because that's when all the, when all that stuff comes in, we start to analyze. I think it's 8 to 10:45 or something like that. So yeah, we'll be breaking down everything. It's going to be a diverse group of panelists. So I'm excited to be on. It'll be my first like panel with like a news organization. I feel like I don't know what to do, like how to dress. Like I got to practice. Do I have to practice like how I sit and stuff like that? It's going to be different than sitting here in a podcast so comfortably. All right. So Prop 1.
Hold on. No.
Yeah.
Wait, back to the news. Yeah. We're officially switching to Thursday nights now.
Yes. Yes. For the foreseeable future. Yeah. That's a good point. Thank you. We'll be switching to Thursday nights. So, you know, tune in Thursday. We've been going back and forth between Tuesday and Thursday. We're going back to Thursday for the foreseeable future. So yeah, just make sure you mark your calendars. And if you can't watch us live on Thursdays, you can always listen to the audio podcast on Spotify, Apple, Google, all of those places. So with all the news out of the way, we hope we see you at the Libertarian Convention. And yeah, tune into NBC 7 on March 5th. Anyway, Prop 1.
Prop 1.
Prop 1. It's the only prop on the ballot for March 5th. It's also odd that it's in a primary. Usually, I feel like ballot, like props go all the way to the general, but this
one. Yes, I was confused. Like today, yeah, talking to my husband, I was like, I think we vote on it on the 5th and not. I like it's, I mean, it says it's on the primary, but I'm like, I was confused because it fell off. So thank you.
Yeah. So that's the first thing. Yes. We are voting on it on March 5th. So for all those people who are, you know, maybe not voting in the primary or something like this, if you're interested in Prop 1 itself, every Californian is going to get a chance to vote on Prop 1. So it is a massive overhaul of the Mental Health Services Act, which was written in 2004. We're going to get into the details. We're going to listen to Gavin Newsom himself. One of Camille's favorite activities is to listen to Gavin Newsom.
I would honestly love to have him on here. Like, please, somebody connect us.
Well,
I would love to just like speak to him personally. But hey, regarding the March 5th thing, not to be all conspiracy, but is, do you think there's a deliberate move having this? I mean, usually the props pass with flying colors, but Do you think it's kind of deliberate? Like they know there's less turnout and more people will just vote yes and it'll just slide in there? Or am I just being a weirdo?
No, actually, I think that's something I never really considered. That's an excellent point, which is that, yeah, a lot of people, there is lower turnout during the primary. A lot of people don't even know the primary is happening, except for political nerds like us and people tuning into this podcast tonight. So, yeah, there's definitely a possibility that there is lower voter turnout, because if it's the general, especially if it's landing on like presidential elections,
right,
election, you're going to have a huge turnout.
Exactly.
Historically, this is one of the oddities of California. Historically, Californians do vote down stuff that kind of raise bonds or taxes or anything like that. So I think if this got like a full election cycle, it probably would have been exposed a little bit more. I think there probably would have been a little bit more money behind it. But you're right. It did come around like really quickly. They were like, hey, Prop 1, okay, vote on it in March. And I was just like, even I was caught off guard. I was like, oh, we're voting on a proposition. Okay, we probably better tell people about it. So there's a lot to get to. So I think the first thing we should do, should we introduce it or should we just go into how Gavin Newsom describes it?
I think going into how Gavin Newsom describes it, but can I make a comment?
Yeah, go ahead.
Which this is, I mean, I told you this comment before we got on here, but I'm very upfront that I'm a Republican, but I don't want to be a Republican who just comes here and says, proposition, taxes, bad, don't, you know, no, vote no, vote no. Because the truth is, sometimes there are some worthy things of like, hey, it's going to be some tax dollars up front, but down the road, there's worthwhile things. So yeah. I don't like, this is not a show up and we're going to tell you, hey, this raises your taxes, so vote no on it. It does raise your taxes. But I went down so many random rabbit holes with this. Like, okay, there's a 100-page guide. Make sure my address isn't on here. This is like literally 100 pages, and I started marking up. But you guys, I get it. I get people don't want to read this. These little paragraphs, this fine print, this is so boring. And admittedly, I barely got through this, because I would find one paragraph and be like, wait, what was that? What was that? And then I would go down my little rabbit holes and highlight things and then, you know, send you five links with 600 of my own comments. And then like, I kept doing that. And then like, that's why we were talking about, we have so many tabs open, is because there's so much background information on this. And I want you guys to really, and I'm not saying I have full understanding of this, but I really want you guys to understand this, that we can't just go and say taxes, bad, no. It's what is this bond, this prop really, really doing? What is it accomplishing? What have previous propositions that are similar accomplished? Who passed them? What did they do? Where did the money really go? And so that is what we are really going to get into.
And I agree with you. I think I will say this. I've always told listeners of this show, when you hear bonds are a tricky way that politicians, and we'll hear from Gavin Newsom himself, bonds are a tricky way that politicians in California will get away with saying, oh, it doesn't raise your taxes. It doesn't raise your taxes by 1 cent. Technically, that's true in this bill in the plain language. It does not raise taxes. It does, however, require taxes to pay off later down the road. And when the interest on this accrues, it's going to get worse and worse, and we're going to have to pay it off. I also have my handy dandy primary election. I was going to read a little bit from sort of the background of what is Prop 1. The proposal is new bonds to build more places for mental health and drug or alcohol treatment and more housing. Proposition 1 allows the state to sell $6.4 billion in new bonds. Bonds are a way that the state borrows money and then repays the money plus interest over time. Use of fund, places for mental health care, drug, or alcohol treatment. Prop 1 would give up to $4.4 billion to the state program that builds more places for mental health care and drug or alcohol treatment. The types of places that will be built with bond funds would depend on future decisions by the state. Prop 1 would require at least $1.5 billion of the $4.4 billion to go to local governments and tribes. Let's see. Housing Prop 1 would give $2 billion to the state program that gives money to local governments to turn hotels, motels, and other buildings into housing and construct new housing. So that's that Project Turnkey, which they were doing during COVID. The housing added by the measure would be for people who are, one, experiencing homelessness or at risk of becoming homeless, and two, have mental health, drug, or alcohol challenges. Just over half of the $2 billion would be set aside for veterans. One fiscal effect, which we're going to get into a little bit later, is that more of the money is going to go to the state and less to the counties. There would be no changes to the Mental Health Services Act tax, but the money would be used differently. The proposition shifts roughly $140 million annually of the MHSA money from the counties to the state. This amount will be higher or lower depending on the total amount of MHSA money collected annually. Possible increase cost to counties to continue current programs. Counties would provide more housing and personalized support services, but would have less MHSA money for the mental health services. This means counties may need to use other county, state, or federal money to keep current service levels.
Interesting.
Yeah. So keep note of that, that there's going to be more money going to the state. We're centralizing homelessness now. Instead of allowing counties to figure out how to do it themselves, Gavin Newsom's favorite thing is to centralize as much of the government as possible in Sacramento. And that's what he's doing. This is very important for people to read. Again, talking about bonds. Let's see.
Please, can you explain the bond thing? Do you have, like, are you able to? I can't.
Well, that's why they give you this handy little page to describe what are bonds. Bonds are a way that governments borrow money. So when you invest, let's say you go to your financial advisor and they say, okay, we're going to put some of your money in high risk stuff. We're going to put some of your money in low risk stuff. Bonds are usually issued by governments, the U.S. bonds, state bonds, stuff like that, municipal bonds. They're considered safe because the government technically never really runs out of money because they could just keep taxing people. But the good returns,
we just create money when we just make money when we, like, oh, yeah, we're low. Let's just create some money.
Yeah. And we, the Fed will just print money and buy their own bonds back, creating the money supply. So the state government uses bonds primarily to pay for infrastructure projects such as bridges, dams, prisons, parks, schools, and office building. The state sells bonds to investors to receive upfront funding for these projects and then must repay the investors over a period of time, typically a couple of decades. And currently, the amount of bond debt in California is $80 billion in bonds, which is more than our deficit right now. In addition, the voters and the legislature previously have approved $30 million in bonds, $30 billion, that have not yet been sold. Okay, so you can read more about this. If you got your handy-dandy little primary election thing, go right ahead, and it's good bedtime reading to put you right to sleep. They have arguments for and arguments against. We're going to get into all that stuff. Anyway, shall we hear from the man himself on why he thinks this is such a great idea? Let's see. Still getting used to the technology here.
That is the main focus of our sit-down with our show's most frequent guest this year.
With us right now is Governor Gavin Newsom. Welcome back to the show.
My first time on the show.
Yeah. Nice to be with you. Welcome back. So this time we're at the Phoenix House, and we've come here to talk about Proposition 1.
Yeah.
For people that haven't read it yet, what is Proposition 1?
It's to address the original sin in California, and that's the deinstitutionalization, the shutting down of our mental health facilities in the state of California. Going back to 1967, accelerated in the 70s, in the 80s, lacked not only a state focus and funding, but also federal funding. We promoted and promised moving away from locked facilities, community-based facilities like this, but we never fulfilled that promise. We never fulfilled that vision. This is about finally fulfilling that vision. It's about not promoting a promise, but delivering on what was promoted a half century ago and addressing the crisis of our time, the issues around mental health, homelessness, and the related issues around crime, quality of life.
Okay, so there's two parts to this, right? There's a $6.3 billion bond.
Yep.
And what does that do?
11,000 units. I mean,
I'm going to stop right there for one quick second because this is something he said in another video. Newsom loves to point the finger at Ronald Reagan about homelessness. And this has sort of been the this has sort of been the cry of Democrats is pointing the finger at Ronald Reagan, saying, oh, it's Ronald Reagan's fault. You know, for all you Republicans out there who think it's our fault that there's homelessness on the street, it's not our fault. It's that guy, you know, 50 years ago who was governor. That's his fault.
Dude, 50 years ago, Phil, come on.
Is that 50 years ago?
No.
40 years ago?
Oh, well, wait, I guess, wait, when he shut this down in the 60s and 70s when he was governor, sorry.
It's 50 years ago.
I was like, that was not, okay, sorry.
I try, I mean, I know I struggle with the idea that the 90s were 30 years ago.
Right.
So,
no, I was thinking when he was president and I was born like in the last
year. Oh, no.
And I was like, I'm not there yet.
No. And when he was governor of California back in the 60s, late 60s and 70s, to clarify, when Ronald Reagan was governor of California before he was president, he signed what is called the Lanterman-Petras Act. Now, we've talked about this on the show before. The Lanterman-Petras Act, Lanterman-Petras Short Act, it was a bill of rights for those with mental health problems passed, and it was passed by the Democratic-controlled Assembly 77-1. The Senate approved it by similar margins, then Governor Reagan signed it into law. Okay, so let's back up a little bit. Yes, he did sign it into law. It was pushed forward by a Democratic legislature. It was a reaction to a lot of the abuses and civil rights abuses that were going on with mental institutions back in the day. Like the stories that you would hear about people getting, you know, the guys in the white lab coat showing up and throwing you in a straitjacket and dragging you off to mental institutions. Like that was a thing. Like there were relatives who, you know, you had that one crazy uncle who, you know, may have been a conspiracy theorist. And people were like, oh, we're just going to send, you know, Uncle Joey to the mental institution, which was a real thing. They would actually do that to people. So they created this bill, the Lanterman-Petras Short Act, still in effect today. And the way you can still get people into mental institutions, but you have to get what is called an LPS conservatorship. And a conservatorship is where someone comes in and they have legal right to control your healthcare decisions, where you are, where you live, all of that stuff. Care Court is a reform of this LPS conservatorship. So Democrats recognized that this was a bad move. How many years ago? 50 years ago. And they recognized it led to a lot of these mental health issues and people being on the streets. So now they're trying to kind of go backwards and undo a little bit and make it a little bit easier to institute people, especially with substance abuse problems. So that's where this all came from. So he's going to say, in another video, he says, well, it's all Ronald Reagan's fault. It's not my fault. You're fearless leader, you dumb Republicans. That's why we're in this mess today. Not my fault, not Democrats' fault. It's because of Ronald Reagan. This article that you sent me, and he's sort of right that none of this actually did happen. They never did go into the community-based facilities, and they never really completed the other half of what they were promising. Lanterman, one of the sponsors or authors of the bill, later said, I wanted the law to help the mentally ill, he said. I never meant for it to prevent those who need care from receiving it. So even the guy who wrote the bill recognized what an absolute pile of dog crap it was after he wrote it. Of course, in all likelihood, not a single homeless person or mental health patient received anything close to the amounts. This is all the amounts that they're talking about. So where did the money go? Well, it went to feed the voracious, ever-expanding homeless mental health industrial complex, notwithstanding the fact that the worsening crisis signals that nothing we're presently doing is ever going to work. And we're going to talk about that. So just to give a little context of where he's coming from.
I mean, the biggest issue is we need more units. We need more housing of all types. We also need reforms on zoning. meaning placing these facilities, and we need to reform the process, the time it takes, because the costs are astronomical and unacceptable. In addition to that, 27,000 outpatient slots. So this is the most significant. There's never been a state in U.S. history investing more to target the issue of our time, behavioral health, mental health, target chronic homeless individuals, but also target the needs and desires of everybody watching that's struggling, maybe themselves, with issues of mental health and emotional distress and those they love. And so this is one of the great opportunities, the most exciting thing I've ever been part of. No BS.
More than anything you've ever been a part of? Why is that?
This touches more people in more ways on more days. This has the promise of promoting the reforms and the changes the state is desperate for. People have had it. I've had it. I know what everyone's thinking. Here we go again, talking about homelessness.
It's also exciting for him because it's the one obstacle that prevents him from being elected to the White House. So he's going to try and push this and make it look like it works.
Just talking about housing, mental health, and we failed to deliver. This is the missing piece. And we've been putting this together for a few years. We've been promoting this bipartisan support in Sacramento, rare. And it's going to be on the ballot in March.
And so there's the bond, and then there's also sort of changes in the way that funding is done,
yes,
right? So that it makes it easier to do something like that and to create some beds like this.
Yeah, I mean,
as
you
well.
See a unit like this, and you read the headlines in the LA Times, and it's $800,000 a unit. You're a taxpayer. You're going, are you kidding? It took 6 years to develop that. That may not be fair, may be fair. The bottom line is we don't have time. We need to get these sites up, and we need to do it in a more cost-efficient way. But here's also the other exciting component part. We're going to reform the Mental Health Service Act. What is it? In 2004, the voters passed.
So the Hoover Institution wrote a really good article regarding the cost of building a lot of these units. And they had pointed out, it says about $2.2 billion from the bond will be used to build 4,350 permanent housing units. This works out to over $500,000 per unit, which is outrageous and unrealistic at the same time. It's outrageous because building a small housing unit should in no way cost $500,000. It's unrealistic because the price tag is likely to be twice as high as that, as comparable construction is now exceeding $1 million per unit. And this is important. And we'll get into this when we kind of break down the numbers. It's one of our favorite things, is to look into the financials and follow the money. An important reason costs are so high is that builders must pay what is known as prevailing wages on these projects, which can be as much as twice as high as market wages. And these costs will continue to rise in the future. There was another article you sent me, actually, that was actually really interesting. On sort of the same topic, this is actually from 2021, a California Globe, entitled The Homeless Industrial Complex.
Isn't that 2019?
2019. Yeah, what did I say?
You said 2021. That's fine. It's just that there's such like a pre-COVID, pre and post-COVID are like two different worlds, you know? And so,
yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, it's definitely two different worlds, and inflation is definitely a big deal. But this is pre-COVID, and this is in Los Angeles. They're talking about a new shelter that was going to be built in Los Angeles City. I'm trying to find where it is. An example of wasteful sending can be found in the homeless shelter being built in Venice Beach, where a permanent population of over 1,000 homeless have taken over virtually every public venue, including the beach. Because their tents are now protected by law as private space, they not only serve as housing, but as pop-up drug retailers and brothels. To get these folks off the streets and off the beach, a 154-bed shelter has been approved by the Los Angeles City Council. It will be a wet shelter, meaning druggies and drunkards will be able to come and go as they please, meaning there's no stipulations as to, you know, there's no requirement for you to show up. There are some shelters where they say you have to be sober to show up. This one and like a lot in California are becoming like this, where you don't have to be sober. The estimated cost for the shelter so far is $8 million. Again, this is 2019, which equates to over $50,000 per bed. So.
And I didn't have time to follow up with that to see if that had even been built or what was going on with that project. I think I found the article at like 4:30 today. And so I didn't have time to like go through and see, well, okay, what came of this?
Yeah, this is a couple of years ago. So I thought there was something in here about the lady who ran the homeless or this specific nonprofit, but I guess not.
A millionaire's tax, Prop 63. And it was for mental health. But let's be candid. Look at the conditions we're experiencing. It needs to be reformed. It didn't even include housing back in 2004. It didn't even include substance abuse. So we're reforming it and we're targeting the money, more accountability to address chronic homelessness, ongoing money. So there's no excuses about the investments at the local level with accountability and requirements that there's collective vision and planning. That's never been the case with state funded programs in the past. No tax increase, just a reform of the existing tax.
Okay. Again, I mentioned this already. Politicians like Gavin Newsom use the bond issue as a slimy way of saying there's going to be no tax increases. But that's not true. So thankfully to our handy dandy little primary. Now I lost the page. Our handy dandy little primary election guide. It may not technically raise taxes because in the bill there's no tax increase of any sort. But remember, they're taking out bonds, and bonds have to be paid back, and bonds have to be paid back with interest. So $6.68 billion ends up being more than what it was when they originally took it out. This is from the primary election guy. It says Prop 1 will cost taxpayers more than $10 billion. Prop 1 puts taxpayers on the hook for decades to pay back new bonds. This isn't free money. It's credit card borrowing from Wall Street. According to the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association, bonds are the most expensive and inefficient way to pay for a government program. And with the interest rates today, it's a very bad time to be taking out new bond debt, adding at least 60% in interest costs, costing taxpayers estimated $10.58 to $12.45 billion, which will take decades to pay back.
So. Sorry, kids. Sorry, kids. You were born in California and you're raised here.
Sorry. Sorry that you're going to end up paying off all of their debt. And that's on top of the $80 billion that's already out that has to be paid back. So when he says it doesn't raise any taxes, technically it's true. This bill does not raise taxes, but Californians are going to pay for this through taxes because how does the government raise money anyway? It has to raise it through taxes. So remember, kids, there's only one way the government ever makes money. It's taxes. You can call it regulation or fines or whatever. It's all taxes.
Why do they create jobs? It's paid for by taxes.
Right. They create jobs paid for by you. So you create jobs. Government doesn't create jobs. They take your money and create jobs.
Investment.
Can we solve homelessness without this?
I think the scale and scope, we've gotten 68,000 people off the streets. And that's been politifact because no one believes it. They roll their eyes.
Yeah.
Because they don't see it.
Don't so we have scale. Like 100, what is it? I think I have it written down. 170,000 homeless people in California.
Sorry, yeah, it sounds about right.
He said 68,000. Or did he say we've gotten them off the streets or we have them on the streets? I'm not sure. But anyway, there's twice that. More than twice that. And I just want to bring up a real quick point that we can delve into later because I sent you some articles, but they keep kind of interchanging mental health and homeless.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I sent you, not all of these homeless people have mental health issues from what I don't know if you did you see those last articles that I was sending you today where it was like.
Yes. Yeah, it's actually that's another great article. Let me pull that up. Well, if you want to, here we go. This is from Cal Matters. This is actually last year, June 20th, 2023, the biggest survey of homeless Californians in decades shows why so many are on the streets. The number one reason Californians end up homeless and the vast majority of them say a subsidy as little as $300 a month could have kept them off the streets. Meaning money, income. It's not affordable to live in California. So that's the number one reason why people are homeless. Loss of income. Yeah.
Jobs.
And this is something that I get really frustrated with Democrats is because, again, it's like putting a Band-Aid on an axe wound. Like they keep doing this whole, oh, we have to focus on the symptoms, but we're not focusing on the root cause of why there are homeless in California. One of the saddest things I think, my wife and I saw when we were during COVID, because there's nothing else to do besides walk down to the beach and come back to get any sort of exercise, is we would notice a lot of people in our neighborhood would not look homeless like you think of homeless, where it's kind of like they've been on the street for a while, their clothes are dirty, they kind of look disheveled and stuff like that. They looked like newly homeless. Like they look like they just walked out of their apartment and just posted up their tent on the street. We saw a lot of newly homeless people during COVID. And that was people who were, looked like they just put all their stuff in a cart. They had their iPhone and they were just that they had nowhere else to go. Like they were kicked out. They couldn't pay for their rent. Now there were a lot of renter protections and stuff like that. But if you lost your job and you couldn't work, I mean, there's a lot of people who didn't listen to that and you had to be kicked out and you lost your income. And you think of all the service workers, people who were living paycheck to paycheck, people who relied on tips, people who relied on restaurants being open. A lot of those people went through real hard economic times. And I think that should be what California focuses on, but they won't focus on the fact that at the root cause of all of this is affordability. Like California is hard to live in. And if you're lower to middle class, you're kind of walking like a tightrope to even stay, to even keep a roof over your head almost every month, like between electricity doubling. SDG&E or PG&E, like their rates are going up 24, 25, 50%, like in the span of like a month. Like all of a sudden you're going, I'm paying double for electric, groceries are more, utilities, gas, all of this stuff costs more. And Democrats never address that issue, that people are just like living on the edge. They're living one paycheck away from being homeless. Instead, they focus on mental health issues. They're not focusing on that issue.
Right. And that article does go on to even talk about stories of what you just said, where people are saying COVID shutdowns, mandatory shutdowns, they lost their jobs. They moved into their car. They moved in with friends and then those friends lost their apartments. And then they were, trying to couch surf here and there, but then eventually they had to move into tents. And it was, I understand that there's a lot of factors at play here, but I think those of us that, are paying attention can easily say these mandatory lockdowns and shutdowns destroyed businesses, which destroyed lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's now, mental health. Well, the majority of people that are homeless in California lost their jobs during your mandatory lockdown, Newsom. This is your fault. And yeah. Many couldn't recover.
Yeah. And they never expected in their lifetime. They may have been doing fine, or maybe they've just been getting by. They never expected in their lifetime that the whole world would shut down and you wouldn't be able to make a living.
Yeah.
And they had nowhere else to go. They had nothing else to do. And they ended up homeless. And I mean, like this article said, I feel like I'm going to have to work really hard to put all these links in the show notes, because this is a lot of good information for anybody else who wants to read as much as we did. We prepped a lot for this episode. It says a loss of reduction or income was the most common response, with 12% of people saying that's what caused their homelessness. Just 4% blamed their own substance use or drinking. So more people said it was because of loss of income than substance use or drinking, which they're trying to link these all now together.
Yes, exactly.
So between this and the reform they're doing with CareCorps and the LPS conservatorships, they're blurring the lines between actual mental health issues and substance abuse. So now substance abuse is a mental health issue, which allows them to spend all this money on mental health services. But according to this survey, that really isn't why a lot of people are homeless. It says, quote, this lack of income and severe instability in housing precarity, it has a spillover effect on people's relationships, their use of alcohol and other kinds of problematic substances. It impinges on their health status. And yeah, I mean, that makes sense. Like, what's the number one reason why couples fight? Money. And if money is tight and you don't know what's going on, you don't know how you're going to make rent. Like all of a sudden, you know, it builds up stress. People fight. Maybe they turn to substance.
And I don't, I'm not trying to downplay mental health issues. They're real. They exist. There is a need. Like I'm not implying that whatsoever. I just want to be like, let's really get to the heart of this issue.
Right. No, I think these are all fair questions, because if you're going to ask California voters to approve a $7 billion bond, 6.68, whatever, let's just round it up to 7 billion, because that's what it is. A $7 billion bond. You better cover all of the bases as to why there is homelessness, right? Like, you can't just focus on one aspect of it. Again, it's the Band-Aid on the axe wound, where you're like, well, we're going to tackle this one thing. And it's obvious why they want to tackle it this way is because politically it looks better to clean the crazy guy yelling on the street and taking a dump on the street. It's easier to clean him off, like just take him off the street and put him somewhere else.
Right.
Politically, that looks better.
Maybe Will gets the grace. This is, you know.
Yeah. It looks better if all of a sudden you go, hey, remember, you know, that crazy guy who would run around with, you know, a big shoe on his head or something and scream obscenities. I don't see him anymore. I don't know where he is. Oh, well, looks like the park is nice and clear. Like, that's what voters see. And the politicians get to pat themselves on the back and go, we did it. We solved homelessness. I mean, we dragged off crazy homeless Joe off to the mental institution and locked him away. So good job for us. There was another thing that this is really kind of off topic. Well, it's kind of on topic, but from this article, it says another myth the study attempts to dispel is that most homeless people flock to California cities because of warm weather, liberal policies, and generous services. In reality, 90% of the people surveyed said they were last housed in California. 75% say live in the same county as where they lost their housing. So I actually thought that was pretty interesting, because I was one of those people who thought they just bus everybody to California because you have places like San Francisco that give out welfare and free money and stuff like that. So that was interesting to me. All right, let's keep going.
Scale and scope. We can solve homelessness for an individual, but the scale of the challenge in the state and those that are struggling that end up on the streets every single day to keep up and get ahead, we need something at this scale. And this is all about scale and speed. Scale, speed, and accountability at all levels.
Well, and that speed problem is an issue, because no doubt there are people that are taken off the streets, but then there's new people that show up and replace them, and oftentimes more. I mean, especially in LA County, we've spent more money on homelessness and the problem keeps getting worse.
You got it.
So what do you say to people that don't trust that the government can do this right?
Because we have to scale the solutions, and we have to do it in a more cost efficient manner.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm going to make a sarcastic comment, but you know, I'm a stay-at-home mom. If I ever get a job, I'm just going to go into every meeting and be like, we have to scale. And people are going to be like, yes. And I'm going to sound so smart. Carry on.
I like that his answer is we have to scale. Like that, that's, you're not doing a good job. So like, to take your example, imagine if you went into work and they're like, hey, you know, this isn't really going well. Like your sales are down and like your productivity is horrible and your team's not doing well. Like what are your solutions to this? And you just went into your manager and was like, scale. We just have to scale. And they're like, scale what? Like you're doing horribly. You want us to give you more money? Like, yeah, I want you to give me more money. That's obviously what we're doing is working. So scale. I'm going to do that the next time. Like, you know, my bosses have a question. I'm just going to go, we got to scale. That's what we got to do.
Thanks, Gavin.
You don't scale bad things. You scale.
Finger pointing. We need to align the strategies with more intention and focus. That's exactly what this does. This shifts the funding stream, enforces a focus, and shifts it away from the silos of cities and counties and regions.
I feel like that's what he's doing now. He's just like word salad, shift the focus. He's like, we have to shift the focus. And then he starts just saying stuff. And you're suddenly like, you're right. I don't know. I'm trying to figure out what you're talking about now. You've definitely just shifted the focus. I am learning all kinds of tips for when I someday go back to work, if I someday go back to work. Okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna use a lot of this gobbledygook whenever I don't have an answer for something. I'm just gonna go, look, we got a scale.
As you're gonna ask questions and you're like, just shift the focus.
Shift it and move, do the hand motion. You gotta do the hand motion of scaling and big hands and then shifting, scaling.
It'll help if you have like a little like tennis ball or something and you just shift it from one hand to the other and just shift it. And they're like, okay.
Okay. Well, this person looks like they know what they're doing. I'll trust them.
It focuses on the most acute chronic problem. And here's the thing. It also focuses on prevention to address precisely the issue you talk about by making eligible the Mental Health Service Act money. Get no new taxes, not a penny more in taxes on that reform. The money goes to help pay rent, prevention strategies, and addressing the issues, particularly in the beginning of an issue. And I think this is an important point. This is all about treating brain health early before we punish it later. We call this treatment not tense for a reason, because the old binary, when it comes to the issue of behavioral health, substance abuse, people self-medicating with drug or alcohol addictions that are out in the streets and sidewalks, is encampments or confinement. Literally, quite literally, that was the old binary. You're either out on the streets or you're in the county jail. $100,000 here. And of course, complete failure and abject frustration here. This is about addressing that and addressing that gap in a very strategic way with proof.
For those watching, do you take a course in political hand maneuvers? If you're watching this, the amount of hand movements that Gavin does, he points, he does this, he does that, he does the swing, and then he does this, he puts it together.
Yes.
It's a lot of motioning. Like, I remember Obama had like big motions and stuff like that, but man, Newsom takes it to a whole nother. You think he's Italian the way he moves his hands. So
okay, so you know I take this very seriously and I do a ton of research. But I am sincerely sitting here watching this video for like the third time. And I don't know what the heck he's talking about. Like, is he still talking about Prop 1? Because I'm so confused with all the shifting of focus and the strategics and the, and what was the first one we were making fun of?
Scaling.
Like, I don't know where we're at. And I'm like, not even trying to be like funny or cute or whatever. I'm like, I legit am like, what are you saying?
Oh, that's the Gavin Newsom MO is he's very good at word salad and he's very good at distracting you with his big hands. And, you know, that's, yeah. Alex doesn't really push back in a lot of these interviews. He's a nice guy. We've met Alex. But with Gavin Newsom, he doesn't really ever push back on a lot of the stuff that he gets a lot of these exclusive interviews, but he doesn't really ever push back on him. He just lets him do his word salad.
Proven strategies. We're not making this up. We know what works. That's why we're in a program that's working.
New PPIC poll this week showed pretty good news on this front. About 2/3 of Californians like this idea.
That's great.
But you have a way to go on that. But there are opponents. And what some of the opponents say is their concern that this is going to be forced treatment for folks, yeah. Reminder of the 60s and other things like that. What do you say to those opponents?
Well, I say, look at the status quo. It's unacceptable. Everybody's talking about the way the world should be, but they don't have the actual strategies and tools to actually address these conditions. We actually have come up with proven strategies to address the conditions. And yes, we have to do things differently. Yes.
Can you imagine that's the answer that he gave right now? Is someone concerned says, well, I don't want the men in white coats and straitjackets to come back and start grabbing people off the street and throwing them in mental institution against their will. And he just goes, well, I guess you like it the way it is.
It's not funny. It's an a-hole move. It's
kind of like
such a jerk comeback.
Yeah, it's kind of like, well, I guess you like the status quo. What else do you want us to do? It's like, I don't know, not grab people off the streets and violate their civil rights. Can we talk about that? No. I guess you like the status quo. I guess you like crazy people taking dumps in your streets. Like,
I was just going to say that. Like, obviously that's what you want.
That's what you want. You want the homeless to take over our cities.
What the GOP wants, and that's why they have it. That's why they don't want this bill.
That'll be the new like attack ad. It's like Republicans don't want you to. They don't want to clean up homelessness. They want the people taking dumps in the street. That's what they want.
Supervisor Jim Desmond is on the Instagram Live, and he says Prop 1 is a total scam. It's taking more taxpayer dollars and using the same housing first principles that have led to record amount of homelessness. Yes.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks for tuning in, everyone.
Thank you for Supervisor Jim Desmond. Great supervisor down here in San Diego. Thanks for tuning into the live. Okay, so let's keep going. I think we got a couple more minutes left. So,
yes, when someone's out there having, on this schizophrenia spectrum, is out there screaming and yelling in the middle of the streets, pulling their pants down, defecating, and we have no tools to help that person. And the only thing we have is compassion by watching them die and suffer on the streets in the name of compassion. We want through Care Court, a separate initiative, to have the resources and a resourceful mindset to, have court-ordered treatment.
Again, this is what they've done with LPS, is they've reformed it so that they can now force people into treatment. So it sounds great. Care Court sounds nice, but there is an issue of civil rights and kind of forcing people back into mental institutions.
Due process, and a process that doesn't replicate the 60s and 70s, but dresses what the crisis is today. And I just, with respect, say this to those that are opposed to more aggressive efforts to get people into treatment. You've had 30 to 40 years to prove yourself. Look at the streets, complete failure.
So why is it going to be different?
Wait, who had 34 years to prove themselves? Because we have been since the 70s, with the exception of 2 years, both the Senate and the Assembly have been in control by Democrats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was 94 to 96. One of them had the majority, but otherwise since literally the 70s, they have been in control of this state.
Yeah. So,
who are you talking to, Newsom?
Yeah, they're trying to outflank themselves on this issue, which is interesting that they, they're like, wow, we have to get tough on homelessness. And it's like, okay, you've been in charge for 30 years. So why are all of a sudden now, a lot of this is because of your policies, but now all of a sudden we're going to get tough on homelessness.
There's a comment on the chat here.
Is that they're moving monies from the counties to the state, and then at the state and our Newsom have proven they cannot and will not fix the problem. Yeah, we're going to talk about that. Great point, Tammy.
Yes, I actually wrote, because I had found, that was the initial thing that I found was shifts $140 million annually of existing tax revenue for mental health, drugs, and alcohol treatment from counties to the state. And my comment was, hell nah. Mm-mm. More so than the taxes, it was the shifting of powers that I was like, nope.
Yeah. If you want a good example of how good it is when we centralize power in Sacramento, I mean, just look at COVID. I mean, horrible job there. Before there was this county-centric idea during COVID of okay, we'll let the counties figure it out, let them do their thing, and they know best. They're on the ground. They know what's going on. And then Newsom took over and, he became a mini dictator and said, okay, I'm going to run all of COVID through my emergency powers. And it didn't work. It didn't work because when stuff is centralized and it's this top-down mentality, it's not a one-size-fits-all, and it doesn't work. So
California is the size of 21 state populations combined. Even when you make a $1 billion investment, it's a drop in the overall bucket. And so it's scale. So we did an analysis. RAND actually did an independent analysis. What would California need? Big meta question to address the behavioral health crisis, to address the chronic issues out on the streets and sidewalks for those that are struggling the most with mental health. And they estimate about 6,000 units. The question then was to break down what type of units, where would they be located? How do you locate them? How do you fund them? How do you do it cost efficient way? And what's the time value of that in terms of just making sure they're done in our lifetimes, because we don't have time to wait. And we broke that down and we said we need to do a little better than that, 11,000 units. And we have that bond component, and we're going to reform an existing system without spending more money. You combine those two things with all the other work the state's doing with a different level of focus and energy. This is a
very, pause.
Very different
paradigm. Yeah.
I want to point out that the first time that he said 11,000 units, I was like, okay, I'm willing to forgive him that maybe he meant 11,000 beds, because, but then he said it a second time, it's not going to provide 11,000 units. This money will go to 11,000 treatment beds, because that's way different than 4,350 units that it will supposedly provide. Want to point that out.
It's not 11,000 units.
Drinking game when he says scale. No, we'll die. But, you know, we can do it with water so we stay hydrated.
Okay, so Governor Newsom, obviously in favor of Prop 1. There is, you know, our favorite thing is to look at who else is in support of Prop 1. Let me pull this up because I think this is...
this will be fun.
Because when else fails, always follow the money in politics. So this is the Secretary of State website. You can go on CalAccess. You can look at all the measures and candidates who's being funded. There's another site, Follow the Money, which does the same thing as well. But this, at least, you can show people and be like, this is the hard proof. My favorite thing to do whenever there's a politician or a ballot measure is you can just go and filter campaign distribution by like top down, like highest to lowest. So you can see the top donors. The biggest donors, and we're going to go through this. This one I was scratching my head at. The Federated Indians of Gratan Rancheria gave $1.5 million. There's another estimate that it was like $5 million to this. Now, keep in mind, because this is a ballot measure, like there's no limits. You can just give as like much as possible. And Newsom has done a really good job of like these behest requests, basically like I'm asking you to give to this proposition ballot. California Correctional Peace Officers Association Truth, an American government fund, gave $1 million. They're obviously a union. California Hospital Committee on Issues, sponsored by CAHHS. I believe that's another union. Kaiser Foundation Health Plan. So obviously Kaiser, who would be providing mental health services. Members Voice of State Building and Construction Trades Council of California gave $1 million. Why would they be so worried about giving money to Proposition 1? Why would a construction union be so concerned about giving money to Prop 1?
I can't think of any reason.
I wonder what they would get in return for spending $1 million. Sutter Health, obviously another one who would benefit from providing mental health services. Service Employees International Union Political Education and Action Fund, SEIOU, another big union, SEIOU, local... More Construction Union, PG&E, affiliated entities. Interesting. Power. Who would be power, gas, and electric? They would probably benefit from more units being built. California Medical Association Physicians Issues Committee. That's $250,000. California Building Industry Association Issues Committee. Another construction company or another construction union. Interesting. California State Council of Laborers Issues, PAC. PAC giving $250,000. Are we starting to see a trend here with who is giving money? Who are the top donors of Prop 1?
People that would benefit. I'm sorry, PACs, groups that would benefit from, you know, who's going to convert and build these buildings, who's going to treat these centers, who's going to have, who's basically, who's buying into employment?
I mean, it just goes down. You can just go United Healthcare, Sutter Health again, Blue Shield of California, Center and its affiliate HealthNet, SEIOU again, United Healthcare Workers, California State Council of Laborers. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. It's, and then Wendy Carrillo. I don't know why she popped up and gave money. California Statewide Law Enforcement Association, Dental Association gave $100,000. So yeah, that's pretty interesting that they gave so much money. Well, it's not interesting. I mean, it's expected.
Yeah.
A lot of these people are going to benefit. And whenever you look at this stuff and you go, well, who's supporting it? Why are they supporting it? That's always one of the best ways. And this is a tip that Camille and I always tell people. If you're curious about why they're pushing a proposition or who's behind a candidate or something like that, just go and check out who's funding them, like who's giving the money. And in this case, you can clearly see it's construction unions, construction committees, construction PACs, and healthcare. They're both going to be huge benefactors of this. The Federated Indian Tribe of
yeah, they just love Newsom. They've been one of his biggest supporters. I don't know.
Yeah, they've given like millions of dollars to Gavin Newsom over the years. So, and they're like, well, they're Marin County, so it makes sense.
Okay.
Isn't that where like Newsom lives? He lives in Marin County. Or no, he lives in Sacramento now, but I'm sure he has a house in Marin County or knows people very well in Marin County. All right. So next, who's in opposition of this? We've already talked about the Howard Jarvis Institute. Senator Minority Leader Brian Jones is in opposition. Diane Dixon, who was on the show last year, is in opposition to this. There is a good article that I want to pull up. So if you have any thoughts right now, please feel free to share them while I'm getting this article up.
If anyone in the comments has any thoughts or questions, please feel free to share them right now.
So this is from the LA Daily News. Proposition is an expensive scam that must be rejected on March 5th. It says the measure is terrible, but collecting business is going very well. In January, the Federated Indians of Gratton Rancheria kicked in $1.5 million. In December, contributions of $1 million each came in from California Hospital Committee on Issues, sponsored by California Association of Hospitals and Health Systems, the Kaiser Foundation, all these places we've gone over. Sutter Health donated $1 million in October and another $150 in January, so on, that we've already talked about. Five and six figure donations came in from associations representing law enforcement, dentists, domestic workers, teachers, firefighters, new car dealers, doctors, and nurses. Generous donations came in from Dimension Energy LLC in Atlanta and the Community Solar Action Fund in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. Seeing a pattern? Mm-hmm. Yep. So it basically, like we just said, to fool Californians into voting for Prop 1, the governor has been emphasizing that it will help veterans. In fact, only 2,350 housing units are projected to be built for veterans from this $6.38 billion bond. That's a lot of money for not much help. So it's to kind of wind down because we're almost coming up on the full hour here. There's so much to talk about.
I want to say something if you'll allow me, but it's okay if you won't.
Go ahead, because there's something else I want to find. So go ahead.
I mean, is it okay if I talk about what I sent you this morning regarding the nonprofit? If you don't want me to get into it, okay.
No, go right ahead.
This is just a random rabbit hole that I went down last night when that video that we were watching of Newsom, at the beginning of that video, they're recording it at the Phoenix House, which is, I think, in Venice, which is in LA County. And I got curious, what is the Phoenix House? And I started looking into it. And then they're a nonprofit. So then I wanted to look at their financials and I couldn't find their EIN, but then eventually I did find their filing from 2021 and their president. Okay, well, first let me clarify that I am in no way, shape, or form, no taxes, tax filings, or nonprofits. Okay. I just try to look and figure out what I'm looking at. And I need to reach out to a professional and have them teach me because I would love to understand this. So let me just say that I am not going to say that there's something nefarious going on here. If anyone knows and wants to follow this up, like through, I am extremely curious and confused about this. So that nonprofit, Phoenix House, where Newsom recorded that interview at, it's a nonprofit, kind of like a rehab center. It's a treatment center for addiction. And I found their filing from 2021 and their president is paid like $300,000 a year. Is that like, it was about that. And then I go back to their website and I'm looking at their FAQs and then it actually lists their EIN under there. And I realized it wasn't the same EIN that I was looking at on the filing. And so I went to the IRS site and found that nonprofit and realized I was looking at from 2021, very similar filings, but definitely two separate filings. And she was paid the same amount. And so were the, like all the employees were paid the same amount on that second filing, but then some of the other numbers were different. And so it wasn't like a random double filing with two different EINs. It was like that place has two different filings and 91% of their funding comes from the government, which means taxes. So $600,000 a year in salary is what I'm seeing because everything was doubled. And then so everyone else's salaries are doubled. And I'm not implying that if you work for a nonprofit that you shouldn't be paid. I'm not implying that she's not legit or that she's not qualified or anything like that. But imagine if her salary was 250 as opposed to 600. And now that leaves 450 to actually provide services. And so if this is what's going on, because Newsom says at the beginning of the video, here I am at Phoenix House and we need more of these. Is he implying that we need to be paying more presidents of nonprofits these absolutely outrageous salaries with tax dollars? Because that's what I'm seeing. And I would love for anyone who knows this, like contact me, message me, and I'll send you the filings. And then you can tell me, because maybe it's just something I don't understand. Maybe there's nothing weird going on here. But 600K a year for a nonprofit funded majority by our taxes, I'm not okay with that. So.
Yeah. And I, while I was, you were talking about that, if you just go and DuckDuckGo, like CEO, nonprofit, homeless nonprofit CEO salary, California, I found about 12 articles already about how much people are making. So this was the article I was thinking of before. It's from the California Globe. It's a different article related to Measure H, which was passed in LA County. It allowed for $41 million to be advanced to LA housing, LAH, I'm assuming that's the housing department, to fund ramped up services and operating expenses, despite millions being thrown at the homeless crisis under Lynn's watch, the amount of homeless grew by 33%. So Lynn is the CEO of, Peter Lynn is the CEO of Los Angeles Homeless Service Authority. He makes about $250,000 a year. And under his stewardship, homelessness in LA County has gone up 33%. So it's good business to be in the homeless industrial complex.
We've talked about that before. If we solve homelessness, these CEOs don't have this high salary anymore. Like, what is their incentive?
Right. There's no incentive to solve homelessness for a lot of these nonprofits when you're making $250,000 a year. There was something in the end of this article. Somebody spent $933,000 on someone's hotel stays for his clients in 2017, like almost $1 million on hotel stays. Like,
what?
Yeah. And it's not like they were spending it on homeless. They were spending it on their clients for a million people or for almost $1 million. This was something
out anything, a bunch of filet mignon like other people we've talked about before.
The Valley nonprofit CEO made $570,000 in a year. So to give you an idea, that's another salary.
Now, are these being funded by the government? These are government funded nonprofits.
I would imagine that a lot of these are. In LA, developers are charging,
or at least majority. I mean, it says on their website 91%. So I just like, again, that means us.
The longtime CEO of Central Valley Coalition for Affordable Housing, Christina Ally, runs a modest sized nonprofit that helps build and manage housing developments around the state for low income, disabled, and senior residents. The organization employs 22 people a year. Newsom wants to spend on average $74,000 per year per homeless. Imagine the nice home or apartment you can rent for that. Valley, and that's who she is. She makes $570,000 a year at a modest size nonprofit. And a lot of this, what Prop 1 is they're going to be giving out grants to these counties. And obviously whoever, you know, like all, as we've seen with all the people who are contributing, they're going to be lining up asking for these grants, these construction companies, the people who want to get these government contracts, the healthcare industries, like all of this is like, this is big money for a lot of people. They're seeing a huge pot of $7 billion that they can all get their hands on.
So it's now a good time to let people know that I am available for hire as the CEO of a government funded nonprofit.
I would say, yeah. Like, if you
just contact me, guys.
Contact.
I got time.
And if anything, you know, just in your interview, talk about how you want to scale.
Yeah, I want to scale. I want to shift focus. I'm really good at talking with my hands already. Like, I already have that down. Look at me. I got this.
So, yeah, I mean, you can keep going. Like, let's see. Oh, this is an interesting one. Interesting. I mean, you can just type in homeless nonprofit CEO salary of California, and you'll just get article after article, of these people making $250, $500, $1 million. Like, it's just, they're making a ton of money and it's a huge business. And like we said, there's no incentive to ever stop homelessness or end homelessness because you're making a ton of money. A lot of these people then turn around.
They often have a lot of incentives of, because like, okay, just to be honest, 250K in some places, such as, you know, like Newport Beach in Orange County, that's not going to go far. It's, unfortunately, you know, it's just not going to get you that much. But this is their salary. Plus they probably have health benefits that are really good and dental benefits. And then who knows what other incentives they're getting, a company car, you know, gas mileage or free charge hookup in there, whatever, you know, there's all sorts of extra benefits that come along with that. And so I'm not quite so mad at the 250K, but when it starts creeping up past that, that's where I'm like, really?
Really? Yeah. Yeah. If you're supposed to have a noble, if you're supposed to be doing this noble job, like helping the homeless, I feel like it's weird that you're taking more than $500,000 as salary.
I agree.
Someone asked in the chat on Instagram, how do we know the money isn't going back to their party as donations? Well, I mean, you could just look up like a lot of these people, like go to followthemoney.org and you can literally just put in these people and it'll give, it tracks like all of these people. It's an amazing website. So you can literally take someone's name, put it in, and it will pull up like all the donations, where it went to, what ballot measures, like all of this stuff. So you could literally see like, who do they donate to?
People are allowed to donate who they want to donate to. I wanted to point something out just to, in case people come across as if they are at notice, in the Prop 1, there's 16 board members on this mental health thing that have like a lot of kind of voting power, I guess, for some of the things that will, they want to increase it from 16 to 27 board members. And I got very curious about their salaries and I couldn't find them anywhere. And I finally called them and asked, I was like, you guys are being paid by the government. What's the salary here? And I was told it's per diem. And so that's, I just want to say that, okay, that's fair. That's actually not like, we're not giving $1 million to these, you know, annually to these 16 board members. And now we're going to increase it to 27. So just in case anyone questions that, I did. That's the answer I got.
So there's a lot to, I mean, we're coming up on well over an hour, but there's a lot to get into with Prop 1. As we've shown you, I'll put as much of these links in the show notes as possible for people to kind of do their research on their own. But definitely think about this. And this, I think your point at the beginning of the show is very valid, where you said it came really quickly. It's in a primary election where a lot of people aren't really paying attention. I think, what did they raise? Like over $11 million for this proposition in support of it.
It's and probably like, more. I didn't even look at the filings today. Yeah, I mean, it seems like every day there's crazy filings coming in. When the news articles came out 2 weeks ago, there's been daily filings since then that are in, like a lot of them are, you know, as small as 25,000 and up to 100,000, 250,000. And that adds up quickly. So
it does. And to give you an idea of like how lopsided this is, it's $11 million raised in support and only like $1,000 raised in opposition. Like nobody's talking about this. Mm-hmm. And I think they try and say, oh, it's a bipartisan bill, we should all get behind it. Like this is, and you know, I think, sure, Shannon Grove is involved. She wrote a whole op-ed about why we should vote for it.
We were supposed to start with that. That was the original plan.
That was the original plan. And then we found the interview and we're like, this is a better way to kind of go through it and just fact check Newsom. But yeah, I mean, it just goes to show you that, like, another lesson, there's a lot of lessons in this episode about being mindful, being skeptical, being critical of, like, your elected leaders, people who are running for office, propositions, all that stuff. Like, just because they're on your team and team blue or red or something like that, like, just because they're on your team doesn't mean you have to follow blindly. Like, you can ask questions. You can be like, wait a second, I don't understand. Like, maybe this, like, can you give me some more information? I want to look into this more. So this whole, like, bipartisan thing shouldn't just be a selling point of, like, well, if, you know, my team's on in support of this, then I should just follow it blindly. Right. There's a lot here.
And they make it sound, you know, we're going to solve mental health and homelessness. And, like, yes, we want that. We don't disagree with that needs to be solved. That needs to be fixed. Like, mm-hmm. But I just know it's often like the, you know, Republicans will say, well, this raises taxes. And then the left is like, you guys have no compassion. And it's like, well, what does this really do? We do have compassion. We do care, but couldn't this money be used way better than 600K salaries and $900,000 on hotel client guests? And, you know, if we're really trying to solve mental health and homelessness, then shouldn't the money be there?
Well, because politically, if you look at it this way, it's easy to cut the ribbon at a new facility for mental health. Because it's something tangible that voters can see. Oh, I built this big mental health facility. Look at all these new fresh beds. And we're doing something to tackle homelessness. Because that's what politicians want. That's what the government wants. They want to show you a tangible result for what they're doing. I mean, they don't want to show you the price tag of how much it actually costs to get to that endpoint. But again, the issue is, and most people in government, especially here in California, don't understand, how do you make California more affordable so people aren't living paycheck to paycheck and they're living on the edge where they are going to be homelessness? They don't really know how to do that. That would also mean they'd have to cut back on regulations and taxes. Yeah, people in California don't really want to do that. So it's easier to hand out billions of dollars and say, look at this new mental health facility that I built. It's so beautiful. Look, we're ending homelessness.
Do you remember that show? This is so random. Extreme Home Makeover. I feel like if we just hired them, they could come in and like in every county build all these things in like a week and get all these volunteers and money. Yeah. And like it would come in under budget and like we'd all get tax credits and we could be like, thank you, look at these beautiful facilities you've given us.
Not, you know, built by unions who are charging top dollar because they know it's government-backed contracts. All right, well, I think that was a pretty comprehensive episode on Prop 1. There's still a lot to look forward to. You have any final thoughts before we sign off for the night?
I think I said everything.
Yeah, I mean, do your research. That's always our general thing. We don't tell you which way to vote, but do your research. And make sure, because it's coming up quick.
Yeah, get out there and vote. I guess that's my final thought.
Local. And if anyone you know is like, hey, what the heck is Prop 1? Can you explain it to me? Send them this episode. So that's the best way. But anyway, as we like to end every show, thank you for everyone for tuning in. Make sure you like, share, subscribe, review, all of that stuff. And like I just said, if anyone out there is like, what the heck is Prop 1? I don't understand it. Send them this show. Tell them to listen to it. We break it all down for them. We'll put the show notes in there with the links and all that stuff so they know we're not making stuff up. It's the best and free way to support the show is to just share it with somebody. And we'll see you on the next one. Have a good one, everyone. Later.
Thank you for listening to another episode of California Underground. If you like what you heard, remember to subscribe, like, and review it, and follow California Underground on social media for updates as to when new episodes are available.